Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke.
People go to the movies and are thrilled by the coexistence of people and dinosaurs in the Jurassic Park series. But Dr. Paul Sereno is proof that the dinosaurs don't need to be alive for the adventure to be real.
Sereno is a paleontologist, National Geographic explorer in residence, and professor at the University of Chicago. He's also discovered several new species of dinosaurs in places like Mongolia, Morocco, and Niger.
Sereno will be the latest speaker at the Milwaukee Public Museum's Science on Tap series later this week. We reached him at his office first, and I wondered if the romance and spirit of exploration we associate with earlier days still exist today.
Well, Bonnie, I'm delighted to tell you that stuff not only happens, but some of us have described our current state of affairs on the globe as entering an age of exploration. You know, it took me a long time as a scientist after globetrotting and realizing that there's nothing I love more than the challenge of the distant corner that has not been visited, the animal that has never been seen. I had to admit to myself that even though I have this degree, that degree, I've taken this course and that course, what I truly love and what drove my career is a childhood love of what you describe. I describe my work as adventure with a purpose. The purpose is pushing back, let's say, the frontiers of knowledge in some way or another. And the adventure is how you do that and how you get to it. But we are in an age of exploration, and all the young listeners should take note of that, because, you know, we're going to map the ocean floor for the first time. That's 3/4 of the world. I scuba dive. I enjoy looking at things that very few people have ever seen. We are finding dinosaurs at a rate that we've never, ever found before. It's an enormous renaissance because more people understand what they are. Even, you know, I had to travel to the heart of the Sahara before I could run into a human that didn't really know what a dinosaur was. They thought they were large camels. You know, they still knew what the fossils were. They were bones, but they had different ideas about them. So I just want to underscore that it is every bit as exciting as you make out an Indiana Jones-type world, if you so want it to be. That said, I would describe some of my expeditions and some of my trips as the world's greatest weight loss program. You can run into circumstances and heat and diplomatic complexities that challenge you. But that is, in fact, why it hasn't been done and why people haven't made the discoveries that you're making, because there's a bit of a challenge in it. But that's all for the adventure.
Well, and there's also the part of it, too, just the hard work of it. I mean, that I think that's the part that gets glossed over in the Indiana Jones idea of this, is that there's a lot of slog that you have to do, literally sifting small pieces of fragments. I mean, there's a lot of particular work that has to go into this as well.
No, you're absolutely correct on that. And, you know, there's different stripes for different folks. So there is exciting, I mean, truly riveting discoveries that I've made on a museum shelf. There are discoveries I've made under a microscope in a nice air-conditioned room. And then there are discoveries that I have made in 120-degree heat when my hammer that I laid down on the ground is too hot to pick up, because I'll get a third-degree burn picking up a hammer. So there's all sorts of different conditions. But what is true is that a lot of people have come before you and me, and a lot of discoveries have been made. So to go out and make a discovery, and there's plenty to make, but to go out and make a discovery sometimes does take, in fact, a fair amount of effort. And there's actually another interesting aspect of this, because a discovery in and of itself, to me, is something largely you didn't expect. Sometimes I go out in the field looking for something in particular and find it. But a lot of times, in fact, science in general and my life as a scientist is governed by finding things you didn't expect. And if you're really good, you realize it and you seize it. This is how, you know, the expanding universe was discovered. This is how I found the largest archaeological site in the center of the Sahara. And this is really fundamentally how the bigger and biggest discoveries in science are made. You go out looking for one thing and put yourself into a position to discover, and you're there with your eyes wide open to seize the opportunity.
Exactly. You have to be open to seeing something you weren't even conscious that might exist.
That's right. And there's another dimension to this that drives me personally. I was sitting in the attic of the American Museum in New York, wondering about the nuances and details of my dissertation, and then wondering on this particular dinosaur from the middle of the Gobi Desert. And it was exotic. I was surrounded by all the paraphernalia of Indiana Jones, and it was an unbelievable life. I had just come around the world. And I had then, and only then, really discovered that my paleontology and my science could make a difference to somebody else. It mattered to me. As much as it is an adventure and exciting and so on personally, if it made no difference to anybody, I personally would have a hard time doing it. But in fact, it's exciting that other people can see these discoveries. These discoveries push science. And even more than that, I've found fossils that create museums. I have worked for 20 years in one of the poorest nations in the world, Niger, and we have plans to bring the cultural patrimony that I've dug up, ancient humans and dinosaurs, to a new place and have it really burnish and help that country.
The people and who so are these, there now.
Exactly. Yeah. And a cultural center for the nomads in whose backyard these discoveries were made. So there's all these dimensions to the science of paleontology and many sciences in general. Some directly impact health. Others create opportunities for people to discover on their own and economic opportunities for people.
When you go out and you have an idea of what you might be looking for, but you're open to whatever you might discover, are there species that should be there that might be bridge species of some kind or a missing link of some kind? Is that kind of always tucked in the back of your head, or do we have a pretty complete idea of what the fossil record is?
No. Why I went to Africa in the first place was because we knew only the briefest outline, fragmentary form of a few species during a time when we knew dozens from our western United States, from T-Rex to Camarasaurus, Brachiosaurus, and all the rest, Stegosaurus. From Africa, the record was so poorly known, and yet the rock record in the Sahara was there for the looking. You had to go through a few hurdles to get there, to survive, to dig it up and bring that story back. But that's why I went. I didn't know what I was going to find. Did I know I was going to find this species of this? I knew I was going to find something. I've never gone out, I can say this, eyes wide open, with a great team, with great sets of legs and minds, and come back empty-handed. I can tell you that I found things that I never would have dreamed of finding.
Well, you mentioned another key word there, and that's the team. Anybody who's doing this kind of work has to have a really good team. You can't do everything yourself.
You can lead by example, and so I like to be, when we go out prospecting, there's such a personal drive to be the person that finds something. There's such a personal, just insatiable interest in that you're sure that dinosaur skull is just over that hill on the horizon. You are going to physically run in your field boots in 120-degree weather across these sand dunes to get to it and get back to your camp meeting in time. And when you do that, and students and young scholars see that kind of effort, it's a fever. It catches on. So you can lead by example, but you're absolutely right. It is a team sport, paleontology in the field. And these kinds of experiences will link, you and your team together for a lifetime.
So what do dinosaurs teach us about the world today?
Well, in the most fundamental way, the dinosaur world is, for a land animal like we are, the world that existed before the mammal-dominated world. Anything from a cat size to bigger was a group that went extinct, except for the feathered forms that still dominate in terms of species numbers as birds today. And so it gives us a look at what animals did with this place we call Earth, the land portion of it, how they evolved, how big they got. I was just with a very interesting scientist in my office today discussing why it was that dinosaurs got an order of magnitude 10 times larger as herbivores, as predators, than any mammal ever could have. We're working on problems like that. Why didn't they invade the oceans the way many mammals did? Well, this gives us a clue as to how evolution works at the biggest of scales. We can know all we want about DNA. Can you predict a tyrannosaur? Can you predict whether a tyrannosaur would arise again if evolution gave it the opportunity? This is the kind of stuff that we deal with in paleontology.
You mentioned the oceans, and earlier in the conversation, you were talking about how we're getting ready to map them, and there's a whole part of the world that's open for discovery. Is it likely that we might find some fossil record or some kind of record of aquatic dinosaurs that we don't know about? Or is that really a separate kind of lifeline?
Well, you know, one of the most perplexing things, in fact, it's going to be what I'm going to be talking about in part in Milwaukee. Why dinosaurs never invaded the oceans or even marginal habitats in their long and illustrious history, dominating all the land surfaces for 150 million years until they became birds. And then the race was over and they invaded many times to become pelicans and penguins. There's a rhyme to this, I believe, and I think I'm onto the trail of evidence. But that's a very interesting question. Now, so the Spinosaurus, the animal that I'll be spending, bigger than T-Rex, the animal that I'll be spending some time talking about, is the most aquatic that we've ever found. And yet, from an aquatic standpoint, it's quite a disappointment, as we'll see. Not very well adapted. Why? And so, to your question, I doubt we will find aquatic, non-avian, non-bird dinosaurs. And I think I have some idea as to why. But we will find plenty of other marine reptiles and mammals. The whale story, for example, the fossil whales, that transition, we've literally rewritten the book on that in the finds that have been made the last 10, 15 years and around the Mediterranean in Indo-Pakistan. So I think that we will find. We've got snakes now with little limbs on the back. We've got snakes with little limbs on the front and back. So we've seen that transition. So there's lots of things we're going to discover. But aquatic dinosaurs, it might be a long day before we find one.
It's just interesting because, of course, there are so many very, very, very old species that still exist in the waters. And it is so interesting that the dinosaurs directly didn't seem to have that aquatic part of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to find things out about the ocean. In fact, living things, as you know, there's this enormous squid that was found fairly recently is an example of a very large animal in the deep that we didn't know about. And of course, you go back 25 years and the vents were just being discovered and the animal life surrounding those very deep water environments. We're finding out all sorts of things, and we're going to find new species, there's no question. Land species and genera, the next highest category, something very different, you'd call a new genus, are rare, but we're finding them. We're finding them in all groups of land animals.
So it sounds like for anyone who is thinking about what they might want to do when they grow up, that there's lots to still discover.
There is lots to still discover. And of course, most paleontologists would accept, and just seen some new analyses, that we are in the sixth great extinction, the one that is, in fact, following upon the great extinction of dinosaurs, with the number of species that are being limited and, in fact, driven to extinction, the environments that were changing. And so it comes to the generation of young kids and young scientists to help us conserve what we have left and study it. And so it's a call to science, actually. And we've seen it at the highest levels of our government to say to solve problems like cancer within half the time that we would otherwise. Well, we've got to solve some basic information and understanding of how life will adapt to human presence and climate change in a big way in the next generation of scientists.
And we're kind of running out of time.
We are. It's happening really quickly.
Well, it's also happening quickly that you are going to be here in Milwaukee to talk at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Paul Sereno, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show.
You're most welcome.
Paul Sereno is a paleontologist, National Geographic Explorer in Residence, and professor at the University of Chicago. He'll be the latest speaker at the Milwaukee Public Museum's Science on Tap series this Thursday evening.
You can also see a cast skeleton of Paul's most recent dinosaur discovery at the museum as well.
We'll switch from paleontology to geology when Lake Effect returns right after this.